We're all familiar, no doubt, with 2 Kings chapter 5 and those opening verses, certainly. This is about Naaman, this great man, this champion amongst the army of Syria. He was the captain of the host. And he was the man who was struck by leprosy. And you know how the whole story finished up, so I'm not going to go this far, but you know what happened. He went to Elisha's house. Elisha told him to go and dip in the River Jordan 7 times, and when he would do so, his leprosy would depart. He did exactly that, and that's what happened. His leprosy departed, because God is the omnicompetent God. He can do all things. Now, we're not going to go as far as Naaman being cured tonight. That's not really what I want to focus on. What I want to focus on is 3 of the characters: Naaman, the little maid, and the king. Because we're prone, I suppose, to overlook the characters and really focus upon the leprosy. And I want tonight to really encourage you through this passage. I want you to see how the scriptures compares Naaman and the little maid. There's a play on words here. Read verse 1 with me. Not all of it, just the first few words of verse 1. It says, "Now Naaman, captain of the host." We have this man's name, Naaman, and we learn that he was the captain of the host. You go to verse 2, and look at the little maid here. "And the Syrians," verse 2, "had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid." Here's the difference. With Naaman, we have his name, the little maid. No idea what she was called. She seemed to be insignificant. He was a captain of the king's army. She was a captain. Look again at verse 1. It says, "Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man." A great man with his master, and honourable, and so on and so forth. Again, look at verse 2. Look at the little maid. "And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid." He was a great man. She was just a little maid. He was a captain. She was a captive. He was called Naaman, and we're not even told what her name was. And there's a play on words here. Well, what's the scriptures doing? It's setting up this mighty strong man compared to this almost completely insignificant little girl. Remember what the Word of God says. The Lord is pleased to use those who are weak and those who are little to advance His kingdom, not so much the strong. And so we're given these introductory details about the few of them. She was a captain, he was a captive. He was a great man, she was just a maid. He was called Naaman, she's nameless. And once you have these introductory remarks already in the back of your mind, subconsciously, you've got it. He's mighty, she's insignificant. Those are the introductory remarks on the two of them. But then we're told something very important about both. We're going a little deeper now about them. We're going to get very personal with them. And here's the personal details. At the end of verse 1, we're told he was a leper. He was a leper. At the beginning of verse 3, we're told, "And she said unto her mistress, Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria." She's preaching sermons. He's a filthy leper. And I want you to really grasp what's going on here. The Lord's setting Naaman and this captain beside each other for us to learn something. Because you can read this story and completely miss the little maid. And that little maid is of great significance and great encouragement to you and me. This is very quickly here, begin with Naaman, and specifically his leprosy. Alright, it said there that he was a leper. And again, I've mentioned it already, you know what happens. That he dips in the water and the leprosy is removed. And people try to explain that away by saying that Naaman's leprosy wasn't the kind of leprosy that we're familiar with today. People say it was more like those different kinds of skin diseases which we can take, say like psoriasis or eczema or some kind of scabies or something like that, which can come and go away. And that's how they explain this miracle away, as they've tried to do with many miracles in Scripture. But if you go to chapter 5 and verse 27, you'll find there that it was leprosy, as we know it today. Verse 27 says, because remember how the leprosy that was on Naaman went on to Gehazi, because Gehazi sinned against God. So verse 27, the leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee, and unto thy seed forever. And he, that's Gehazi, who out of greed sinned against God, and he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. And that's how the condition of leprosy, as we know it today, is described as white as snow. So it was full-blown, proper leprosy that Naaman had. Nowhere around this, God wrought a miracle in removing leprosy from Naaman. Now, that's just to set the scene here. Let's look now at the little man. Because here we want to really focus tonight. Read verse 2 with me again and just read it methodically. And think about the bigger picture here. Think about everything that's going on in this little girl's life. I don't know what age she is. We know she's a little girl. This is traumatic. Verse 2. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife. Okay, so she was a little maid. He was a leper, but she was a believer. Is it not a little bit intriguing to you that she's the believer? He is the one who was winning great battles. He is the one who's seen victory after victory. He is the one who's been exalted and enjoying God's blessing. For verse 1 even says that the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria by him. The Lord was using Naaman. And he's just a leper. But the little girl, a little girl who's a captive and was in the middle of horrific circumstances, she is the believer. That's a strange thing. You'd expect it to be the other way around, the mature, mighty, experienced man, not the little girl. Think about this little girl for a minute or two. She lived in Israel somewhere, but her home, her city had been plundered. And in particular, her home had been plundered. And I was thinking about that. There's no doubt that when this family and the people saw the Syrian army rising up, they would have been praying. A little girl and her parents would have been praying, Lord, deliver us from the Syrian army. But it didn't happen. Furthermore, when the army would have broke down the front door of this little girl, surely her and her mother and father would have been praying, Lord, deliver us from these men who are about to destroy us. But he didn't. He didn't deliver them. Her prayer, as we see it at the minute, wasn't answered. You have to ask. This little girl's a captive. So where were her parents? At very best, her parents would be alive. They maybe just broke into the house, plundered the house, robbed them of all their goods. But if they were still alive, they would have been deeply brokenhearted because their little girl had been taken away captive by thugs and robbers and thieves. They would have been in utter turmoil knowing that they would never see their little girl again, and who knows what would have happened to their little girl who has been stolen away. And of course, this little girl herself, absolutely terrified by the circumstances in which she's found, ripped out of her home, ripped away from her family, sucked into an army with a bunch of evil men and carried away. That she's bound to have been terrified. At the very worst, the men would have broke into the house. They would have slaughtered her mum and dad, perhaps, before the wee girl's eyes. This little girl could have seen the most horrific of things. She unquestionably would have, because there was war, there was fighting. She would have seen people killed and bloodied and all the rest of it. She was a witness to some horrific stuff. she's a believer. And Naaman isn't. I find that striking. How would this be girl felt? You have to sit here or stand or whatever and think how this wee girl would have felt about family being slaughtered or the very best plundered and whatever else the case may be. But the reality is, here she is. She is serving the very man who was responsible for either killing or plundering her parents. Naaman was the captain of the guard. He gave the charge, go into Israel, break down the cities, break down the homes, steal the little girls, kill the parents. How insulting then that she has to turn round and serve the very man who most likely would have killed her own parents. Anybody else would have wished the death of their captor. Anybody else would wish for their captor to die because he deserves it for the atrocities that he brought about in this little girl's life and in her area in which she lived. But that's not the case. In fact, she wants her master to be healed of leprosy. I just find this little girl's heart absolutely extraordinary. Not only has she the ability to utterly and completely forgive Naaman for the atrocities that he did to her and to her family, but she wants him to be well. And she makes it her personal interest and concern to do what she can to make sure this master of hers is well. You see her kindness and you see her forgiving heart. But what I really want you to focus on tonight is her faith. Her faith astounds me. You see, other people in this situation might see a God who let them down. A God who let them down. Others might say, no, they look to the Lord in their great time of need, and God did nothing. Because that's certainly the picture painted to some degree in this scene here. I met a man just last week, and it comes to my mind just when I was preparing this, because he said many, many years ago, he's a mature man now, and life has turned for the worse, but nevertheless, I know him from years back, from Ballycarry there, and he said to me, he never wrote about the Gospels before, but he did for the first time the other week there, and he said to me, he years and years ago, because his parents were believers, he went to different churches, and he said he was seeking for God. He was going round places and wanted to find God, and at that same time when he was searching for God, he says that he found out he had an incredibly hard disease in his body. And that disease is wrecking him to this very day. And he says that the very time that he was looking for God, God turned his back. It's as if God just gave him a kicking and left him out to dry. And what you have there, again, is a man who is deeply wrong because he's got these great views of himself in that he was right and he did everything right and he was the good guy and God's the one who's wrong because God's the one who was cruel and didn't give him the deliverance and didn't reveal himself to him. But that's not the case. That's not the case at all. We had an opportunity with that man, and the time he left, the Lord had certainly turned his heart in a different way than to make profession now, but he was certainly a different man when we left, and we're glad the Lord spoke to him. But why it comes to my mind here, here's this little girl who no doubt was praying, and it appeared that things just grew worse and worse. Yet, she did not turn round and reject her God. Not at all. Other people would maybe say, where is God? I pray to God, and if God is real, why did he not do something? If there really is a God,
How could he let my parents die at the sword of the Syrian army? How could the Lord allow me, a little girl, to be ripped out of my home? And who knows what kind of abuse that little girl would have received? She could have said, if there's a God, how could he have let this happen to me? But you see absolutely nothing of that in this text. Here is a little girl whose faith is ardent and strong. Remember, in Proverbs, the Lord says to us in Proverbs, look to the ant, you sluggard. Learn from the little humble ant. Here the Lord is saying, men and women, you look at this little girl and you learn something. You learn something. Her circumstances were horrific, yet she never questioned her God. Little girl. But boy, she had the sovereignty of God well understood in her little heart. It's a strange thing here because as adults, we always think that children have a lot to learn. And children need parents and children need men and women around them to guide them. And there's truth in that. And that's how the Lord humbles us. He takes this little girl and he says, men and women, you look at this wee girl. And you learn from the incredible faith that she has. Two things I'll leave with you. First of all, I want you to see her concrete faith in God. Her concrete faith in God. You see, she is not shook by the fact that she has been stolen away from everything that she knows and she's isolated and on her own. That did not shake her at all. There is no sense that this girl is in any way ashamed of God here. She is not ashamed of God at all. Maybe other servants in the house would have said to her, you know, little maid, if you have such a great God, why did he let all this happen to you? Why did he let these tragedies happen to you and to your family? And I suspect that little girl couldn't answer that question. I would suspect she would not have the ability to explain God's providential happenings. But just because she can't answer every question doesn't shake her faith. Just because she's finite and she doesn't know everything doesn't mean that infinite God doesn't exist. Just because she can't explain anything in no way hampers her walk with God. I want you to see how outspoken indeed she was. Remember, this is a little girl. And she is a prisoner. And she is serving a pagan in a pagan country with a pagan religion and pagan people all around her. And look at her boldness. Verse 3, and she said unto her mistress, would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. There is no sense of being ashamed or scared here whatsoever. I admire her faith in her God. It would have been easier for her to have said nothing here. She could have stood and kept her head down and dusted, cooked, whatever the case was. But it seemed to be from her words here that maybe there was a wee period of time where she didn't have the courage to speak. And maybe she couldn't speak out. But love for her fellow man and faith in God made her burst out with these words in verse 3. You can kind of get the gist of that in verse 3. It's not like she's got up to her mistress with her hands in her pockets and saying, excuse me, miss, I would like to just possibly suggest that if your husband would like just maybe to go into Israel and there's a man there and he's a servant of God, but go ahead and check him out. And there's no sense of embarrassment here. She just burst out, would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria. I love her brazenness, her boldness here. She's overflowing with faith in God and cannot keep to herself her faith without shame. And she speaks with such confidence and she speaks with such faith that instead of anybody rebuking her, and instead of someone telling her to dry up, look at verse
number four. And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is in the land, that is of the land in Israel." She spoke with such confidence that these unbelieving men or whatever here, servants, they're completely convinced of their argument. They're completely convinced. Such strength of faith and such zeal, they were completely bowled over by her. There's her concrete faith in God. Wasn't shook by all the circumstances at all. She knew God was providential and that God was good. Her concrete faith. Secondly, her confidence in God's ability and willingness. She's confident in God's ability and in God's willingness. I want to focus on the second word there, willingness. She's confident that God is willing to cure Naaman. You see, you can get that in verse 3, can't you? And she said unto her mistress, "Would God, my Lord, wherewith the prophet that is in Samaria, for he might, or just possibly would, no, he would recover him of his leprosy." How is she so confident in God's willingness? Remember, this is the wee girl who undoubtedly prayed when the Syrian army was breaking through the walls of her city. And they broke in and God didn't stop them. This is the wee girl that no doubt sat with her parents and prayed for God to deliver them when the army broke into her home, probably slaughtered her parents and stole her away. God allowed them to come in and do that. And yet here she is, and she says with great confidence that God is willing to cure Naaman of this disease. How can she be so confident in his willingness? Well, perhaps it's because this little girl genuinely believed that God did the exceeding abundant above what we ask or think. Maybe she understood that although her parents had gone, God, Jehovah, as she would have known him as, would have taken her parents home to glory. And he had taken her into this foreign country to be a great witness. God had done for her far more than she ever thought or asked. Or maybe it's because the Lord genuinely prompted her here. The Lord moved her heart. She knew this was a word from God. Never felt like that. When the Lord puts something in your heart to pray for. But there's no doubt, this in some sense is a great prayer, a great request here. She's talking to Naaman's wife. But look what she says. Would God. Alright, you get the language there. Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria. And essentially, what she's saying there is, I wish that God, in his providence, would have Naaman where Elisha was, and Elisha would cure him. That's what she said. I wish that God would do this. Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria. And I think it's very clear here that she's been moved by God. She's confident. The Lord has spoken to her. And the Lord has challenged her. And it's a good thing. Sometimes the Lord can put things on our hearts to pray. And there's nothing like it when God really leads you in prayer. That's what's happening here. This girl's sensitive. She believes in her God. She's tested and tried. And she's walking close with her God and knows the mind of her God. And she's only a little girl. A little maid. Then let me just very quickly show you the king here. Okay, so we've seen Naaman. He's the captain. We have seen this little girl. She is the maid. And then if you go with me to verse number 7. Here's the king of Israel, because remember what happened? The king of Syria sent Naaman to go to the king of Israel and seek a cure. And read verse 7 with me. And it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter asking him to cure Naaman of leprosy. And it came to pass when the king of Israel had read the letter that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I a god to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." what strikes me about this king is this. This king knows God. He knows something about God. Because he says, "Am I God," capital G, "am I God to kill and to make alive?" So he knows there's a God. And he knows what God does. And he's expressing here that I am not God. He's acknowledging that. But the problem with this man is, he's like so many, he has a head knowledge of God, but that's all he has. Because this king cannot get away from politics. That's the problem. He says here, "Am I a God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you," here's his politics, "and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." He just sees this as two powers heading for collision. There was a problem with this man. Instead of seeking God, he's only working in the realm of man. This king was miles off the mark. He forgot about a sovereign God who does all things for a purpose, and he has a plan. And that's why in verse 8, Elisha comes onto the scene. And effectively, Elisha says to the king, "King, would you catch yourself on? Just send them round to me, and I'll sort them out. There's not going to be a war." Verse 8. "And it was so when Elisha, the man of God, had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, 'Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Catch yourself on. Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.'" Again, you have this mighty captain Naaman, and you have this little lowly maid. You have this great king of Israel, and you have this lowly prophet Elisha. Elisha would not have been a wealthy man. Things would have been very simple, very humble life. But in contrast to this wealthy, wise, and educated king, you have this double tier here as we close. You have this double tier of mighty, significant people on the even the political scene as it was then, on the throne and on the captain of the army and so on. But the Lord uses these little people, a little girl, and this man of God, and made Elisha. And I want you just to be encouraged here tonight, because we can be prone to look at all our circumstances and get frustrated and think, "Why is God allowing this to happen? It's the wrong way of doing it." This little maid knew that God is sovereign, and he is working all things out for good, and she is confident still in God's goodness and in God's willingness to bless. We live in a day, circumstances are bad. There's coldness, there's hardness. And we think on even a gospel mission coming up with no one really being interested whatsoever. We have a sovereign God, and we can stand like this little maid and like Elisha and say with confidence, "You come. God will forgive. God will deliver. God will see you." And that's exactly what he did. Elisha did come, or Naaman did come, and he was cured. We have a God who is not only able, but a God who is willing to see you in our day.